Wow.
What's up?
I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Where'd you get those shoes?
Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
There's one thing that will forever change the way you sleep, and it's the softest, 100% organic cotton bedding from Boll & Branch. You'll fall asleep faster, wrapped in the most luxurious comfort. You'll never sleep hot again with airy blankets, cloud-like duvets, and breathable sheets. You'll experience pure comfort on night one and feel your bedding get softer with every wash. Discover the difference with 15% off your first order at BollAndBranch.com with code ODYSSEY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. Let's do this Chris Herndon deal. Chris Herndon joins me now. What are we listening to, Chris?
That's a Rewind from Rosalie, from one of my favorite albums of 2024, Bite Down. That album released by Merge Records in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. So a little North Carolina music to welcome our guests, the Charlotte Hornets.
All right, so Hornets tonight, a little break in the Western Conference playoff gauntlet, if that's what it was. Anyway, Charlotte... Nothing about Charlotte suggests gauntlet. Tell me about the Hornets.
You know, they've been really bad this season. They've had a lot of injuries. If you look at like their top seven or eight scorers per game on the season, like they're all like under 30 games, and some of them much under 30 games. They've had a lot of games missed injury. They're also young and probably just not that good anyway. They have won three in a row. It's not an impressive three. They beat Utah. They beat Chicago. They beat the Mavs without Luka.
Right.
But as I haven't seen injury report for today, but in terms of recent games, three of their four best players have been playing all together, which has been somewhat rare. So the team they're going to bring into the building tonight is probably a little bit better than the record they'll bring into the building.
Are they in the Cooper Flag? Who's leading the?
Yeah, they're. I don't
who's
know.
Leading that?
Well, there are eight teams There are eight teams that have a record under 400, a winning percentage under 400. They are one of them. They're not the worst. Washington is the worst. So. Yeah, Toronto is worse, Washington is worse, and Utah and New Orleans are worse. So they're the fifth worst record in the league right now.
All right, that's happening down at FedEx Forum. In the meantime, you have written it's sort of a halfway through the season piece, even though that was last week, right?
I mean, sort of. Well, I mean, the halfway point was like 2 days before MLK. So right. I figured like for the Grizzlies, we can make MLK Day the midpoint.
I think that's fair. So you ask... the question whether they are a contender. It's an interesting question because it hinges on what's a contender.
What's your definition of contender, right?
What is your definition of contender?
I think there are different kinds of contenders. I came up with a phrase a few years ago called the puncher's chance plateau, and that's where you reach a level where if things break right, you can break through. And I think that's where they're at. I think that's where they got to a few years ago when they fell off it, and now they're back to it. There's a level above that. And Oklahoma City, Cleveland, Boston are the three teams right now that are a level above that plateau. I think there's a handful of teams that are on that plateau. Could they break all the way through? They could, but they need a lot of things to go right to do it.
Were the old Grizzlies, the grit and grind Grizzlies, were they on that plateau or were they never even on that plateau?
It's a good question. I mean, they did make a conference finals, which this team has not done. I feel like that team was on it. It wasn't on it every year of the run. But, yeah, I mean, I think that first year, even though they were an 8 seed, like, right. if they caught a break or two, that team, in retrospect, really could have. I mean, they got a game 7 against the Thunder, and that was a year that, you know, the Mavs with Dirk won, which is more of a one-man kind of team. And, like,
right.
you catch a couple breaks, right. like, you know, yeah.
So, in terms of the puncher, I want to get to the specifics of what you wrote here in a minute. I've tweeted the column out. You can read it over at the Daily Memphian. In terms of the things that have to go right when you're on that plateau, there's two types of things. One is internal.
You need both.
And one is external.
Yeah.
Right.
You need to be the best version of yourself.
Right.
And you need for one of those teams above you or some teams around you to, like, catch some bad breaks, which happens, right? The Grizzlies team that made the conference finals, like, that was, like, Russell Westbrook is hurt and Blake Griffin's right. hurt and that stuff was going on, right? And so I think, you know, you need a little bit of both, but, like, that happens in the NBA.
Right. Well, it's I actually think we tend to think more about you need breaks, like, we tend to think more about you need Russell Westbrook to get hurt or whatever yeah. else. Whereas what they also really need is to be the best version of themselves, which means they need this integration of Vince Williams and or.
Well, let's start with can John yeah. Morant. If you're going to go, let's just say you're in the conference finals.
Right.
Say you're getting to game 6 of the conference finals. Can John Morant get to game 6 of a conference finals without missing games? Right. Not only has he not played 5 games in a row this season. The last two playoff runs, he played all the games against Utah when they won and one lost in one round. But the playoff run that was Minnesota, Golden State, and the playoff run where they lost to the Lakers, he missed games in the playoffs. So I mean, to me, the job durability is your starting point. Your durability of the three can your big three be healthy and in good form throughout a playoff run?
Right.
Yeah. Start with that, and then you get to the other stuff.
Before I get to the Grizzlies, but return to the Grizzlies, just in terms of the other teams that you put, so you think the clear contenders are Boston, Oklahoma City, and Cleveland. They're not on the puncher's chance plateau. They're above that. They're your clear championship contenders.
Yeah, and Boston has tumbled of late. Like I was looking, I was going to say, all three of these teams are over 800 win percentage, and Boston's actually under 700 now. Whatever. They're Boston. They're the defending right. champs. We know. So I think Cleveland and Oklahoma City are like on like something like a 70 win pace or whatever. Right. You just can't deny that, even if they haven't done it before. And Boston's done it. So I think those three teams have separated themselves, yeah.
So then the other teams that you put on this plateau, two are of a kind, or three are
yeah,
of a kind.
Yeah, three and three.
The Bucks, Denver, and Dallas are of a kind, and the Rockets, the Knicks, and the Grizzlies are of a kind.
Yeah, the first kind has guys who have either won MVP in Giannis with Milwaukee and Denver with Nikola Jokic, or a guy who is that level, which is Dallas and Luka. And then the other three teams don't have an MVP level individual, but they have like multiple guys playing at all-star level, right? New York, Memphis, and Houston sort of a little bit lesser version of that. They're a little bit less proven in terms of their star power. But I think you have a balance of talent and you have a superstar-driven team. And there's sort of one of each there. I will say, Dallas got to the finals last year. They've tumbled down the standings because Luka's hurt.
Right.
You put Luka back on that team. Right. I don't know if I want to mess with them in the playoffs. And the thing that's happening that's maybe sneaking up on the Grizzlies right now, there's all this focus on Houston. You lost to Houston. You're behind Houston.
Right. Denver.
Look over your shoulder.
Right. Denver.
Because Denver may be back. You know, Denver won the title 2 years ago. They had the best player in the world and they had 6 guys who played well together and they had nothing else. It was a 6-man team.
Right.
It didn't matter. All 6 stayed healthy for 4 rounds of the playoffs. They won a title. They go into that the following summer. They lose Bruce Brown, 1 of the 6. They try to replace him with a rookie, Christian Brown. They're not as good.
Right.
They tumble back a little bit. You go into this season, you lose one of your starters, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. It doesn't look like you replaced him. Suddenly, Christian Brown in year 3 is taking a big step forward, and Russell Westbrook is working out.
He's good.
They may still be a 6-man team, but they might be a 6-man team again. And are all those guys going to be healthy in the playoffs? If they can, Denver is like becoming legitimate again.
In fact, wouldn't you say, If I were to tell you that one of the teams from the puncher's chance, one of the Western Conference teams from the puncher's chance plateau made the NBA finals, isn't it more likely that it's Denver and Dallas than it's the Grizzlies
or Houston? Right? Yeah.
Or
no,
Houston.
Yes.
Yes.
I agree. I think that is true. I think it's more likely it's Memphis than Houston, even though Houston has lost. They've lost 3 to Houston. But I agree. If you look at best case scenarios of these teams as currently constructed, the ceiling seems like it might be a little bit higher with Denver and Dallas because they've done it. They've either won a title or got to the finals in the last 2 years, and they have those players
right.
and Luka and Jokic. Yep.
Okay. So in this,
but
piece,
I do think the Grizzlies are in that conversation.
They're in the category. And by the way, Minnesota.
I look at those teams. I think Indiana doesn't have the ceiling of star power. It's just not good enough. And Houston doesn't have either, but Houston's just better as a team. And I think Minnesota's just too – they're too mucked up right now. And I just don't see them coming out of it in a sufficient way. Yeah.
Okay. So then you break this down in terms of looking at how some various things have been. The stars is the first thing you address. We know that Jaren has been spectacular.
Yep.
But that gets us to Dez and to Ja. I thought it was interesting you said the Grizzlies has never been as good with Ja on the floor as they have been.
Well, that's just looking at the numbers. Their net rating, you know, the offense minus defense, you know, what they score versus what they give up. Per 100 possessions, right?
Yep.
When Ja's on the floor, it's like a plus 12 this season, which is the best it's ever been.
Right.
That's just a statement of, like, that's just looking at the numbers.
Right, right.
But I think the reason for that is, A, the team is good. Like, the team is better than, like, you know, the year they were the 8th seed against Utah or whatever, and that's part of it. But I think Ja has tightened up. We've been talking about this since the beginning of the season. He has tightened up his defense. He's not going to make any all-defensive team. But he pays attention to defense more now than he used to. And I think that is reflected in the quality of overall play. Even though his own scoring efficiency is down, his defense is more than made up for it to me.
In terms of the stat, hasn't played 5 straight games since whatever it was.
Right. Because he didn't do it last season.
Is some of that, I don't know, how much concern do you think you have that, like, some of that's because he had a foot injury the other day. He presumably would have played, right?
He's had 7 separate injury absences this season, but they're not all the same.
Right.
When he fell on his hip, like, that was an injury.
Right.
He came back faster than I thought he would. That was an injury. When he's, like, questionable with foot soreness on the day of a national TV game and he ends up just a last-minute scratch and doesn't play, and, like, even Taylor Jenkins before the game was like, I don't know, we'll see. That may be the kind of game you don't miss in the playoffs, right? And so there is that. And so some of this is stuff maybe you play through in different times. But some of it's not. And I do think, and I think we've seen this from the beginning, the combination of his body type, which is very slight for a professional basketball player, and his style of play, which is very dynamic, very high impact, that lends itself to little stuff. It just does.
But it is true that these three have never been better than they are right now.
When they play. I think that's true. Jaren has clearly never been better than he's been.
And so therefore it elevates really.
Right. I think Bane is back to being his little slightly different version, but qualitatively, like, he reached a certain level and he's back to that level again this season. And the Ja thing is interesting because it's different. Like I sort of wrote about, the scoring is down, but the assists are up, the steals are up, the defensive general play is up. I think Ja's been a little inconsistent, but I think overall when he's played, he has been an all-NBA level player.
So then you look at the supporting cast. They're 4-for-4 on their rookies and their signees.
Upgrades, right.
Yeah, they're Huff and Pippen and their two rookies, which is just kind of extraordinary, honestly.
Right.
But what's interesting is you ask the question, who is their fourth best player? And the answer, Santi Aldama.
I think that's been the answer to this point this season. And
not Jalen Wells would be the only other one you would argue.
You could argue that, but I think Santi has a higher ceiling of a player. I mean, Jalen plays a different role, obviously. If you want to factor in the defense, you could make that case, but that's almost a more troubling case to make, you know?
Right.
Your fourth best player is the second-round rookie, right?
Right.
Either way, the number four guy on this team doesn't profile as the number four guy on a contending team, and that does, I think, make people look at the trade deadline, right? I just don't know. It's just a different kind of team construction, and it may just, you just have to do as best as you can with what you have right now.
What, by the way, is his contractual status? What's it look like for Santi going forward?
Well, the Grizzlies can make him a restricted free agent. I mean, they can sign him before he gets restricted free agency.
Right.
But if it gets to the free agency point, if they extend a qualifying offer, which I'm sure they would make him a restricted free agent, in which case they could match any outside offer. The question of what kind of offer he would get is interesting. There aren't that many teams with cap room. I'm sure he would get a mid-level exception offer, and I suspect the Grizzlies would match that offer. Is there a team with cap space that's going to give him more than that? no one's going to give him like some huge offer, but could he get $20 million a year offer from somebody with cap space who, like, they look around and they can't find somewhere else to spend it? And would the Grizzlies match, you know, a 4-year 80? I don't know. I do think the Grizzlies are quite high on Santi Aldama.
Right. And then there is, and really we talked about this the other day, and so maybe we don't spend a lot. Then there's this sort of, what do we think of the system? And it's been great, but it might have been, they might have been great without the system. I mean, that's sort of where you landed last week.
If you compare, I go back 3 years because that was the last season they didn't have the major injuries and the jaw suspension stuff, right? So if you just compare those two seasons, like, the inputs are different, the outputs are very similar, and I've sort of written about that early in the season. I think the talent they have would lead to these kind of outputs, sort of almost regardless of, of how you input it, you know? And so I believe in the talent more than I believe in the system, which is not to say I don't believe in the system. I do think that, and I feel like I've started to see this over the last couple of weeks a little bit, I think you're going to see over the rest of the season and going into next season, even if they retain the system, they're going to get more flexible with it. I think as Zach Edey gets more experience as an NBA player, you got to use Zach Edey in high pick and roll. You got to get post-ups for Zach Edey. He's a rookie right now. But as he gets year two, year three, like, they're going to incorporate more of that stuff. It's just demonstrated that Ja Morant running high pick and roll with a big mashing big works.
Right.
It's demonstrated that Desmond Bane working off ball around a big screener works. I think they're going to start incorporating more of that stuff into the mix. And they actually said that. It's taken them longer than I thought. But if you go back to training camp, Taylor Jenkins said all this. He said, we're installing this new stuff, and we'll work in this other stuff. I think they will work in the other stuff.
And you pointed out in the piece, they've already started to toggle up the minutes.
Yeah, I think, you know, the Ja, Jaren, Dez stuff, their minutes per game over the last 10-15 is higher than it was for the whole season. I feel like they're going to start tightening the rotation some, maybe not every game. I felt like they were doing that on MLK Day, and then they started the fourth quarter with GG and Jake, which I didn't really expect them to do because they had not played. They had gone deeper with their starters in the third quarter than they did in the first. So that, they did tighten it up a little bit. Jaren played almost the whole second half of that game.
Right.
So I think they're not going to suddenly start playing these guys 38 minutes, but they're going to, I think they're gradually, you're going to see it shift. Yeah.
And then finally, across the NBA, interesting trade, the Suns and Jazz pulled off the following deal. The Suns traded their 2031 unprotected first round pick for three picks that the Jazz had, and they are, you know, the worst of the Cavs and the Wolves.
Three lesser
this
picks,
year. The worst of the Cavs, the Wolves, and the Jazz in 27 and 29. Three very highly protected, sort of contingent whatever picks. So
they played it. They traded a dollar
for three quarters. Right,
is what they did,
and it's because the three quarters might be useful in either getting rid of Nurkic or acquiring Jimmy Butler.
Yeah, it's. I mean, you can see the theory of what they did. What I wonder about is, do they have a specific outcome in mind with it already, or are they just giving themselves more flexibility to do multiple things? Like, you know, some of these Jimmy Butler ideas that are floated around would have, because Jimmy Butler wants to get to Phoenix apparently, and Phoenix has to trade Bradley Beal to make that happen, and Miami doesn't want Bradley Beal, so you need to get a third team involved. And so if you had to get a third team involved, and suddenly like two teams got to be paid,
right?
And you got one pick to pay with,
right? You can't give give a dollar to multiple.
So is it a situation where you take these three picks, first round picks, and two of them go to Miami, and one of them goes to a third team, and that greases the wheels for a trade like that? Do they already have something sort of in the gear, you know, moving with that? I don't know. Or is it as simple as, we're going to use one of these picks to get off Nurkic and get something back, and we still got the other two picks? Maybe we can do something the other, you know, I don't know.
It also, because of the Stepien rule, there was some
question. That's a rule where you can't trade first-round picks in consecutive
years. It gives you more flexibility in your ability to trade first-round picks. How worried should Grizzlies fans be about the prospect of Jimmy Butler landing in the Suns? Would that put them on the puncher's chance plateau where you did not have them?
Oh, if they go into the playoffs and they have Butler, Booker, and Durant all healthy?
Yeah, maybe.
But I mean, they got to work towards... You know, they got to get themselves out of the play-in range and into the playoffs, you know. So, but yeah, that if Jimmy Butler becomes Jimmy Butler in the playoffs, this is why when I worked through the whole thing with the Grizzlies, my conclusion was not there is no way you trade for Jimmy Butler. My conclusion was, yeah, I'd do this if this and this and this and this were true. I just don't think this and this and this and this are going to be true.
Chris, thanks very much. You can read the piece at the Daily Memphian. That's Chris Harrington. If you are selling your house in 2025, call Josh Heisa. Simple as that. 901-461-8147, 901-461-8147, or Josh has the buyers.com. He offers flexible fees, no upfront costs, lets you out of your contract at any time. More than 300 five-star Google reviews. And here's the thing. If you're selling your house, a lot of times you got a house. I got a house. You're selling your house. You got to juggle the sell one, sell your house as you buy the other one. So what helps is if you got a guy like Josh Hysaw to walk you through that. James was doing the same thing. And Josh got his house on the market. Within 3 days, he had an offer they would happily accept, and it made the whole thing a lot easier. Again, that's the kind of thing Josh Hysaw and the team at Keller Williams Realty can do for you. Phone number, once again, 901-461-8147. When we come back, Sam Hardiman's going to join us on the other side. It's Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
So it's a new year, 2025, and you're thinking, how am I going to make this year different? How am I going to build something for myself? But where do I start? Shopify is how you're going to make it happen, and here's how. Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sale. The best time to start your new business is right now. Get your store up and running easily with thousands of customizable templates, no coding or design skills required. All you need to do is drag and drop. Their powerful social media tools let you connect all your channels and create shoppable posts and help you sell everywhere people scroll. What happens if you don't act now? Will you regret it? What if someone beats you to the idea? Don't kick yourself when you hear this again in a year because you didn't do anything now. With Shopify, your first sale is closer than you think. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to start selling with Shopify today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Ah, can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. On January 17th, Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+, and we can't wait for you guys to see it.
And before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recap podcasts.
Yep. Each weekday beginning January 7th, we'll be dropping an episode featuring exclusive behind-the-scenes tidbits and brilliant insights from our cast and crew and us.
Patricia Arquette, Britt Lauer, Zach Cherry, John Turturro, the list goes on.
All your favorite Lumen employees, their friends, families, enemies, in your feed every single weekday.
And here's the best part. After that, we're going to keep going. Tune in weekly as we recap every episode of season 2. The podcast drops on the same day the episode comes out.
It's the Severance Podcast with Ben and Adam.
On Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show, joined now by Sam Hardiman from the Daily Memphian on Twitter, at Sam Hardiman. There was so much to get to with Sam today. I want to start, though, Sam, with, so are we rich now with XAI, all this money that's going to be pouring in? You wrote about this yesterday. What have you learned?
Yeah, we're not rich. By we, local government is not rich.
No, I know. I know, Sam. I know.
So what we wrote about the Dylan opinion, check this out at dailymanopinion.com. Shameless plug for the website. Number one of the day is,
I do that. I think that's appropriate. Yes. Go ahead. Yes. People should.
Yeah. So, yes. is Shelby County tax assessor Melvin Burgess told the Shelby County Commission recently that his preliminary calculations, were in combined city and county taxes that XAI would be paying about $13.5 million. I saw this and I called, Assessor Burgess, and you can read, what he and a kind woman from his office told me, because I felt this was a little low. And essentially, they said, yes, that is likely a little low. And, XAI will probably produce more than $13.5 million in property taxes for Memphis and Shelby County. And to mention the supercomputer has not sought a tax incentive, which is commonly known as a payment in lieu of taxes, which many, many businesses, including the Valero Refinery, not very far away from XAI, receive. And so when businesses, industrial businesses, have lots of very valuable equipment, it is very valuable for them to get a tax break. And XAI has come to Memphis, Tennessee, and has not asked and not received a tax break at this time. And so that money, that the billions of dollars that have been poured into computer chips by Elon Musk and his company, will be taxed in Memphis, Tennessee, and that money is expected to flow into the city and county coffers. And that's why we care, is because the real economic impact of XAI in Memphis, Tennessee is that money. Is you jokingly asking, are we rich? The city of Memphis and Shelby County need all the revenue they can get.
Put it in context, though. How much is $13.5 million? What's the city budget?
City budget is about $800-plus million. So a significant amount of money. In terms of, to put it in context for you, the city spent on policing last year about $280 million, roughly. Don't quote me on that, but roughly around $280 to $300 million. So we're talking about 13.5 would be roughly 5% of the police budget, and it's probably going to be more than that. And this is Shelby County and city taxes, so probably about 2.5% of the police budget is what I'm talking about here. But, like, it's real money, and it's percentage points on a city budget, which when you're talking something $800-plus million, that's real money.
Yeah, it's real money. Is that, you said that is what, that's why it's important, that's why it's good. Is, do you think it will never be, that will always be more than employees, more than affiliated businesses, that will always be the biggest benefit of having XAI here is the tax money?
There's certainly the potential for that to change, but, like, knowing what I know today, the reporting that me and my colleague Sophia Surrett and I have done on this, looking forward, really the main benefit at this time to Memphis and Shelby County is the tax revenue that the supercomputer will provide to Memphis. Are there other economic benefits to having a cutting-edge company here in Memphis, Tennessee, to have this very valuable piece of modern economic infrastructure here in Memphis, Tennessee? Absolutely. There's a chance that other companies, you know, co-locate here and come here because of XAI demand for their products, et cetera. It brings tech executives into town, stuff like that. It may bring, you know, high net worth individuals into town and may have them staying here. But the real benefit and the real tangible benefit at this time, I would say, would be the tax revenue. Yes.
All right. So I was at the school board meeting, last night, which was certainly eventful. But in the meantime, it appears that the, Police Chief Davis has been, reappointed, no longer in an interim role. How did this come to pass?
Yeah. So a year ago, the reappointment of Chief CJ Davis was tabled by the Memphis City Council. And a tabling of a vote is simply, you kind of put it on ice, and at any time the body can vote to take it off the ice. And it had languished on the ice, kind of back in the freezer, getting some freezer burn. And then with everybody else sort of watching other things yesterday, the Memphis City Council, with very little fanfare, okay, just maybe a few reporters who maybe knew what to watch for, made a motion to take Davis off the table, Her nomination was quickly taken off the table. Some members of city council, including some of those who had not supported her in the past, made comments about why they were all of a sudden ready to support her and reappoint her to a role, which she's been in an interim capacity for a year. Nothing really changes between interim and full-time, except that you've actually been confirmed by the Memphis City Council. And then very quickly, a unanimous vote was made to make CJ Davis the permanent police chief once again.
Okay, so two questions about that. You said, one, while people's attention was focused somewhere else with very little fanfare, is that pure coincidence? Like, do you think there's is there anything strategic to the timing of this?
You know, I don't want to speculate. I must
God, I
be
love
disciplined.
To speculate. I love to speculate. That's what we do here, man. Yeah, no, I appreciate your discipline. Do your job,
but
as Bill
I would,
Belichick would say.
I would, but what I would say to the public and to all those listening is, like, was it a coincidence? Maybe. Or maybe it wasn't. what I would say is it is certainly interesting to me as a student of government, as someone who watches a lot of these public meetings, that the Memphis City Council was so ready to make this very important vote very quietly on a day where there were, you know, there was maybe a little drama happening elsewhere.
Okay, and so then, apart from the timing of it, you mentioned that several members of City Council addressed what changed. What persuaded folks in the year that has elapsed that she is the right person for this job?
Yeah, so Jerry Green, a member of Memphis City Council, was quite outspoken and maybe I would say even vociferous in her opposition to Davis a year ago, essentially, and I'll paraphrase her here because I don't have the direct quote in front of me, that things have gone right in the past year. And she mentioned the improvements in homicides, the improvements in crime data, some of the communication that had happened between her and the chief, as well as the chief and the rank and file. Okay. Y'all remember this summer, we at the Daily Memphian first reported that Sean Jones, assistant chief, who had followed Chief Davis from Atlanta, had been voting in Georgia. Shortly thereafter, Mayor Young dismissed Chief Jones from the force, Assistant Chief Jones from the force. And so all of these things sort of happened over the course of the year. And then the city went from record crime in 2023 to still bad crime in 2024, but a significant decrease in crime. And so instead of, you know, last year in January, because it was almost a year to the day, where Davis's vote was tabled versus her being reappointed yesterday, like very close to a year, I think like 363 days or something like that. Last year at this time, we were in Memphis. We were grappling with like the mountaintop of crime that we had just climbed. You know, we're talking about record rates of crime. And now we've come down from the mountaintop a little bit. We're still kind of on the summit a little bit. It's not exactly like Memphis's crime data is. You know, we have a very good story that we wrote a couple weeks ago at the Daily Memphian about two decades worth of crime data. Please go check it out at dailymemphian.com. Shameless plug number two. But really, we're at a place where things are better. And so there was political will, I think, to let Davis go through. And then I would also hazard a guess to everyone that it is very easy when it is easier for a public official to make a difficult vote when everyone else votes with you, okay? And so I would say there is strength in numbers for the Memphis City Council of, they voted 13-0 to reappoint Davis, so nobody's getting blamed because all 13 of them did it.
And does the report from the Department of Justice play into this at all? In other words, it was kind of a searing indictment of the police department, partly under Police Chief C.J. Davis. So which way did the report and then the way that report was handled or the fallout since or the development since, which way did they cut in her reappointment?
Yeah, so Green acknowledged the report and said, look, as a mother of a child and as mother of someone with special needs, like some of the discussion in the report of how MPD has treated children, particularly children with disabilities, really hurts her, that there are real issues the department needs to address. But that they would work through them together. And Mayor Young, after, you know, as the vote was happening, I believe, he said, we're not done. And we have work to do. And the DOJ report is, these are things we need to work on. And so what I would say is, at this time, there is sort of a the politicians in Memphis, the ruling, the people who, you know, govern this city, at this time, they're acknowledging that there are real issues that are found in the DOJ report. But you haven't heard anybody really in elected office calling for Davis not to be in the role, and no one in elected office in Memphis and Shelby County, or at least Memphis, pushing for the city to sign the consent decree, a consent decree or an agreement with the Department of Justice. And so while people maybe have real trouble with the DOJ report, there is a certain amount of solidarity we're seeing among the Memphis ruling class regarding that right now.
All right. And then finally, you wrote about the TVA asking us to turn down our thermostats and not run our washers and dryers and dishwashers. And we speculated at the start of this show whether you, as a good citizen, comply with these recommendations. Do you?
I mean, what was the consensus before I give my answer?
I think we decided you're a good, you're a civic-minded soul and probably are one of the very few people who actually did it.
That would be right. My wife, who's sitting here with me working from home today, she just a few moments ago walked over to the thermostat and turned it up. We had turned it down to 66. We're now, I think, up to 60, 68. Let me see. Let me put my glasses on. Yeah, 69. We did it. There was debate this morning. We were going to use the espresso machine. We did use the espresso machine.
So this was what occasioned this call for restraint on the part of the people. And it ended, but it ended now. Now we can go crazy, right? It ended at 9 a.m.?
It ended at 10 a.m. And it's not quite an end. This was a voluntary call for conservation, right? So it's very much tragedy of the commons here. It's up to people to actually do this. It's not rolling blackouts. And what necessitated this is just the frigid temperatures outside the entire Tennessee Valley Authority footprint. And please go to my X profile, Twitter profile, and look at the Energy and Information Administration data on this. It is a broad 7-state footprint, okay, not just Memphis, Tennessee, experienced record energy demand this week, okay, and record energy demand today. And I want to give people a stat that's kind of mind-boggling.
Okay.
So last year we were asked to conserve power, okay?
Yep.
In December of 2022, we experienced rolling blackouts because there was not enough power available to keep the lights on and keep the grid stable, okay? The amount of power that was consumed this morning in the Tennessee Valley region outstripped both of those instances, okay, according to Energy Information Administration data, which means that Memphis and Shelby County and the broader TVA footprint use more power today than they were using when rolling blackouts happened in December of 2022. Okay.
So that means so they got better at it? Does that mean they got better at handling it, I guess? Is that what it
I'm loath to sort of repeat talking points from a large utility company, but TVA has invested a lot of money in its infrastructure. And you, again, go on the Energy Information Administration website here. It's on my Twitter, and you can see the power sources, where the power comes from. And what happens, and what has happened in TVA throughout these last couple cold weeks, is TVA has really called on a lot of natural gas plants and a lot of sort of peaking plants, it appears, okay, which are plants that you only use during this period of time, right?
Yeah.
To ramp up the electricity. And so every time the power demand has gone up, more and more natural gas has been burned. And so that's what TVA has relied on. In Winter Storm Uri, which is the name for what happened in December of 2022, TVA sort of struggled with those very natural gas plants that were supposed to work and help you through those times, okay? And so it appears that these peaking natural gas plants that TVA relies on are working. And I'm going to say that presumptively right now. I haven't seen the cold, hard data from TVA that indicates that, but this publicly available data shows me that, so to speak.
I did see, by the way, that someone on Twitter/X snarkily asked, hey, you're asking, you know, Joe Citizen to turn down their power usage. You can ask the big power consumers, the corporate power consumers, to cut down too. And the TVA immediately answered, yes, we do. They do, right? This doesn't just apply to my washing machine.
No, and I mean, because your washing machine matters very little compared to a large industrial plant, right?
Right.
And so power users of a certain size, and TVA and I are in a fight about this, and what is public and what is not. But they are, they're enrolled in what is called the demand response program. And so that means users of our over 100 megawatts, which is a lot. That's like several neighborhoods, right?
Yep.
They are enrolled in this, and they are essentially, when this happens, TVA provides them an incentive to curtail the power. Okay. XAI, the supercomputer down in Southwest Memphis, is enrolled in this. Okay. And so they use that. What TVA and I are fighting about is, I want to know every single user that is enrolled in demand response and how much they cut power. And TVA says, no, that's proprietary, and we're going to continue to fight about it. But that is what happens. And so the large industrial users are asked to do this first before it gets to you, the consumer, the average person.
Sam, thank you very much. Chock full of information today. You can follow him on Twitter or X at Sam Hardiman. Thanks, Sam.
Thanks, Jeff.
Yeah, we got to take a break. Back in a moment. Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN. I keep jumping in because I can't wait to say to tell you this. I got good news. Over at Robert Irwin Jewelers, they're having the Santa surplus sale. Get this, 30 to 70% off designer engagement rings, anniversary rings, and wedding bands. Up to 50% off diamond stud earrings. I was just in there buying diamond earrings for Claire. But now 50% off diamond stud earrings, 40% off stunning gold chains and bracelets, store-wide savings. So whether you're looking forward to Valentine's Day, maybe you're getting engaged, maybe you're just looking for to get the perfect gift for someone, now would be the best time to get into Robert Irwin Jewelers for the Santa surplus sale. Of course, they got easy financing. They've been here since 1977. Howie and his team are spectacular. Again, sale ends Saturday. The Santa surplus sale. Bigger, brighter diamonds, better prices. Robert Irwin Jewelers, 5 locations, or online at rijewelers.com. Jeffrey, what is coming up next on 92.9?
Jeff, here's what's coming up next on Jason and John. Jason Fitz and Coach Norton Hurd will join them on today's program. Kevin Cerrito joins me on Jeffrey Wright and Company. CJ Hurt will join us at 3:30. Cobb will be with Gabe at 5 o'clock.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Grizzlies, Hornets tonight at FedEx Forum and here on 92.9. We got to get out of here. Stay warm for now. Work is done.